Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 85 of season 10 of Movie Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off yet another week is Andy Golden of Blueprint Review. Welcome back once again, Andy.
Thank you for having me back, Camber. I'm more relaxed now. We've got the trivia out of the way. Now that I've done a decent job of the trivia, I can relax. Although I am slightly embarrassed about how long I took to get Taxi Driver.
That's not a problem. I can't make it that easy.
No.
The original question had the word cab driver in it, and I had to. Yeah, but you know by now, you know the drill. Just do it by the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So minute 85 begins with the passengers still trying to get into that locked door. And ends with a shot of the board with the red and green lights all flashing. So we ended things yesterday with the passengers finally realizing that, wait a second, something's wrong here. Where are those hijackers? How did they just disappear? I don't know where they went. Someone was doing a magic trick. And so a few of them ran to the front of the train and started banging on the door of the cab, to no avail, obviously. That's not going to help or work for them. They just start banging on the door and screaming and stuff like that. And the mother is sitting there with her two kids, and she's completely hysterical at this point also, obviously.
Yeah.
And by the end of this segment, we see already three passengers that are trying to break down the door to the cab. I don't know what they would do after they actually get into the cab. I don't think they're thinking that far.
No. One thing at a time, I think.
You know, even after seeing this movie so many times, I couldn't tell you what you need to do in order to drive a train. You know, so. And none of those people saw the movie The Taking of Pelham 123, I can guarantee you of that. before their actions of what they're doing here. So. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to quantify that.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do if I was stuck on a train like that, going headlong speed. I don't know what I'd do. Just curl into a ball, probably.
No, you wouldn't be one of the three guys trying to bang down the door.
I might be. I don't know.
Right. Okay.
I would like to be the passed out alcoholic woman. I think she, in this particular situation, she probably has it best.
Well, because she doesn't know what's going on.
No.
You know, you got to give Blue some credit, Robert Shaw, for not wanting to disturb her beauty sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, why wake her up? She's less of a problem than unconscious, isn't she?
Can't be an undercover cop, so we're not working. So, and then we get another great shot inside the tunnel with the train. You know, where they have a camera mounted on the front of the train.
Yeah, they are very cool shots. Yeah, yeah.
And it just goes through the maze of all the different train tracks and stuff like that. So yeah, I like the way that they once again give us this view from more or less our perspective of where this train is traveling to. So yeah, I like that. And then we're back on the train, and you know, we still have a lot of hysterical characters all trying to figure out how they're going to open this door. And some of them start banging on the door. you know, it makes you think that, okay, there's someone on the other side of the door that's going to open it for them. You know, that type of thing. So, I don't know. And then the shot changes and we are in a pitch black area. And then we hear the voice of Robert Shaw, Mr. Blue, say, "All right, all clear." He goes, "All right, then. You know the drill. We do it by the numbers." You know, and he starts talking even without giving anyone any time to do anything. Because then he goes, "Hats, glasses." And then he gets cut off by Gray, who goes, "Drills and numbers. This is all chicken shit. Why don't we just do it?" And Blue just completely ignores him. I mean, if Blue had any hesitations of whether he wanted to work with Gray or not, you know, that we'll never know.
Yeah.
But at this point, we know that he never wants to work with him again.
Yeah, definitely not.
You know, that's something that we don't really need to concern ourselves with.
I was interested by the term chicken shit here, because I knew it more as a phrase meaning cowardly,
mm-hmm.
but the way Gray uses it is means like sort of in petty and insignificant.
That's right. I mean, we talked about that when we called them a chicken outfit. Used that phrase in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I looked it up and it said it was a military origin. Oh, there's also 1920s phrase apparently, which is "you can't make a chicken salad out of chicken."
Correct.
which is true. Yeah, that's why I went vegan.
I believe we talked about you're vegan because of that. strangely, you walked
out. Not really. Apparently, that's the same as it's the same. Meaning is you can't make a soap purse out of a sow's ear.
Yeah. You can't. I don't think I've ever heard that.
Oh, you never heard that one, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, again,
yeah.
Bottom line is that you know, Gray is not happy here.
No.
And you know, it's going to affect what happens with them over the next the course of the next few days. You know, for sure. And Blue, Robert Shaw, basically just ignores him. And then, you know, Gray gets one more line and then he goes, "Why don't we just do it?" he's very impatient. Once
yeah, get out of there. He's done now, hasn't he? He wants it over with.
That's right. And then Blue continues and goes, "Mustaches." The music. The tone of the music changes as he does that. And then he goes, "All right, reverse coat." And, you know, we get all the sounds of the train and things going on, you know, train rumbling and a horn and all that stuff, you know, as things are going. So it's an interesting way to do this whole thing. You know, it makes me wonder what is their plan to do with this garbage bag that they're now putting all these things into? You know, you have hats, glasses, mustaches. Are they giving this to the Salvation Army or something? nobody needs these.
Yeah. I'm sure the Salvation Army will never turn down a few free mustaches.
Probably not. Yeah. Hey, if it can make people laugh, why not? It's all there for comedy. But what's great is that they're holding out like this huge garbage bag. Did you notice that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay, where did they get this garbage bag from?
Yeah, yeah, who's had that? Who's had that in their bucket?
And that's the idea was for them to somehow, you know, try to pilfer these things along the way. I don't know. not that I know where they would have gotten the garbage bag from, but that's you know, yeah, I don't know.
It was funny the other day. It jumped into my memory now. It was when you'd asked me to come back on it. So I was walking down the street in my village, and I was thinking about taking a pen 1, 2, 3, and a man came around the corner walking a dog and said hello to me. And I looked up, and he had the exact face of the disguises that they wear. He had the mustache and the glasses and the hat on.
Did you pull on it? Did you pull on the mustache?
I should have done, shouldn't I?
You're not fooling me, Mr. Green. That's really, really funny. Wow. So you're saying that in your little town there was a costume party last
week? Yeah, maybe.
And someone dressed up as a character from Picking Up Album 123.
Either that or there was a hijacking, yeah.
And what's your costume?
I was plain clothes.
I'm a hijacker of a train 51 years ago. Yeah, so did you take a picture at least?
No. I would have done if I'd had a minute, and I could have done it surreptitiously.
I would have uploaded it here.
Okay, how'd you ask for that? If I'd asked for a selfie with him, maybe. I'm sorry, you look exactly like a hijacker that I know. Can I have a picture?
Well, why not?
Sorry, I thought as well. That's our chicken. Shit. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so what do you know about garbage bags?
Oh, why did I not anticipate that? I know that they probably were invented about 200 years before, I'm going to guess.
Well, if you guess in the future, that'll be true.
I'm going to guess they were invented garbage bags. Oh my goodness. I'm going to guess it was the 1910s.
No, it's the 1950s.
Oh, I've gone too far back this time.
So, I mean, obviously we're talking about modern plastic garbage bags.
Yeah.
You know, not just finding a receptacle to throw stuff out.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know. And it took them a few years before they started manufacturing them for homes. The original idea was that they were, mostly used for waste management in hospitals and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
I guess because they're not biodegradable, so they, I don't know, keep everything tip-top.
Yeah.
Right. Now, do you know the name of the original, the first brand of garbage bags?
Ooh, I've got no idea. First brand. I don't think I can name any brand of garbage bags.
It was Glad garbage bags.
Glad bags.
You've never heard of the Glad company for trash bags?
No, I don't really think about companies for garbage bags. Really, I just stick my rubbish in them.
Okay, that does make sense. Right, so nowadays Glad has three main different types of garbage bags they sell. You have the drawstring bags, which are used mostly in the kitchen.
Yeah.
They hold up to 13 gallons of garbage. Wow. Then you have these small trash bags. So these are trash bags for bathrooms, bedroom, offices. They have them in different sizes and stuff like that. And you have also what are known as compostable bags. The bags are more eco-friendly.
Yeah.
And I guess it works.
Yeah. You know who uses them? Mr. Green.
Mr. Green uses the Glad.
He uses the compostable ones.
Ah, okay. maybe. he's not used to everything going on here, that's for sure. So it is possible. I will not deny that. Will not at all deny that possibility. But I guess if you look at the type of folded up garbage bag, when Blue Robert Shaw pulls it out of his jacket, it's all nice and neatly folded.
Yeah.
And as he's talking, he just unfolds it, and next thing you know, you have a disposable bag to put your compost in. So they first start with the hats, and then they go with the glasses, and then they start going through the mustache. I love how when each of them takes off the mustache, we see that each and every one of them is bothered by the adhesives.
Yeah.
And they all react very differently. Like, Brown gives this really, really crazy face. As if he's just tasted something horrendous. Even though it's not, he's not tasting anything. So I don't know what the answer is to that.
Like, for the sake of uniformity, if one of these men had a real mustache, would they have had to shave it off to put the fake one on?
I gotta tell you, I have thought of that question so many times. So many times. Because I think that is the perfect perfect question that you ask here is, like, here you have a disguise, and hey, I don't want a fake mustache, I'll just grow one in.
Equally, if one of the men had to wear glasses, would they have had to throw their glasses away in that garbage bag?
Unless they would have pulled out a different pair of glasses.
Yeah.
Don't know. No clue whatsoever. But yeah, I mean, we see how meticulous Blue is here, and we see that he's also pretty pissed off at Gray for the way that he's acting. Now we get a shot of the injured cop on the ground trying to pick himself up, but you see that I think he hit his head on one of the beams, because you can sort of see that part of his face is obscured with blood.
Yes.
And there's also what looks like a pool of blood around him. So
yeah,
this was definitely no picnic for him to jump off a plane, jump off a train.
Plane.
I don't know why I keep saying plane instead of train.
It would have been even worse if it had been a plane.
Well, if he had a parachute.
Taking a Boeing 747, you're thinking of.
That's right. And he's pretty injured with the whole thing, but we see that he's starting to come to a little bit, and starts crawling in their direction. And we get a unique perspective where we do see the way that Mr. Brown is standing there unprotected. If there was a undercover policeman who fell off the train. He could potentially shoot you.
Yeah.
Be careful. Then the shot changes, and we see the train come through one of the stations and doesn't even stop. Just keeps going through. And then we see the or at least part of the whole the tracking system for the train, where we see all the blue lights, the green lights and the red lights, and it tells us that the train is in between Astor Place and Bleecker Street. So both those are prominent areas of lower Manhattan.
So, yeah.
It's interesting to see just the technology of the time, I guess you can say. It's Aster is basically the East Village, if anyone's familiar with the term, and Bleecker is actually part of the West Village and Greenwich Village, and the Soho area and stuff like that. It's an iconic street in Lower Manhattan, and it's the center for at the time at least. A lot of Italian immigration came there, beatniks, folk music.
Yeah,
Now it's just like
that's
a
how I
mixture
knew
of
it,
it
the
all.
folk connection. Yeah, it's definitely the folk music connection that I knew it from. There was a singer called, his name was Joey Dead Blonde Girlfriend, and he had a song called Bleecker Street. I just remember the line, the chorus was that they're making a killing, ripping off Bob Dylan. Let's burn Bleecker Street to the ground.
That might be a little extreme. Just slightly. I don't know if you want to have to deal with the cops on this one, Andy. I stay steer clear. And that is basically the parting shot of this particular minute and of this week. We get to see a sign that says Bleecker Street and Astor Place. And the train seems to be by Astor Place moving towards Bleecker. That would be my guess. All right, so is there anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute or about the movie in general?
The other thing that occurred to me about this minute that I quite like is the juxtaposition between the slow, methodical deconstruction of each of the disguises and then the headlong rush of that out of control train. It's like you get all these people who want nothing more than to slow down, and then you get Mr. Grey who wants nothing more than to speed up and get it over
That's right.
with.
He's looking for his destination already.
But no, all I can think of to say again is the come revisiting it again has just made me think what a brilliant film this is. I absolutely love this film.
I knew you already loved it, so I don't think I'd be preaching to the choir, trying to get you to think differently.
But the more you pick it apart, the more you deconstruct
Exactly.
it. I think if I was the guest every week, I would just, it might be my favorite film ever if I carried on picking it apart one minute at a time all the way through.
Feel free, even though I've already done it.
I'll listen along. But yeah, the only other thing that I've got to add is that I've to finish up, I've got a final top five.
Okay.
This is a top five train films.
Ooh.
Which this obviously this would definitely be in it if I was doing it, but we're taking a pound as a given. I mean, there were so many train films, so I focused on particular sort of types of train film. There are a few. I was going to say they were mainly sort of action packed in places, but there is a bit of an outlier there. But this one I haven't seen for a long time, at number five. I remember really enjoying it, but it is a film that seems to divide opinion a bit, and some people really don't think it works. But it's a 70s film called Emperor of the North, with Lee Marvin and Ernest Borgnine as a sadistic conductor and a hobo who's trying to ride his train for free. I just remember really enjoying it. I looked it up and I could see a lot of people think it's not very good, but I remember it being good. So that's number five, Emperor of the North. Number four, I chose the Darjeeling Limited. That's the Wes Anderson film. I think that's one of Wes Anderson's more underrated films. That it's probably the only one that's not sort of more action packed out of these, but yeah, it's I've always really enjoyed it. Number three is the Titfield Thunderbolt. It's a lovely little Elan comedy, quite a sort of bucolic take on the action film, but there's a lot of action in there, a lot of train based mm-hmm. action. Number two is Buster Keaton's The General.
Oh, of course.
Absolutely brilliant train scenes. Probably would have been number one, but for Alfred Hitchcock's The Lady Vanishes, which is my number one train film.
Okay. Those are some great choices. Yeah, I like that list. I'm trying to think of what other train movies I can think of that could possibly be better. Like, I'm aware of the fact that there are train movies I know that most people don't know. Like, have you ever heard of Narrow Margin?
I've heard of that. I've never seen that.
Okay. With the remake, the remake yeah, with Gene Hackman.
Oh yeah. I think that's the one. Yeah, that's the one that I've heard of. But there's the original one. Is there?
The original one is also pretty interesting.
Yeah. The other ones that came to mind when I was doing it, which I the train. John Frankenheim's The Train is a very good mm-hmm. one. And there's also Runaway Train.
Yes, of course, with Eric Roberts and John Voight.
Yeah, but. They're two films that I considered, but it's been so long since I saw either that I couldn't bring them to mind as well as some as these ones. So
right.
These are the five I went with.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I can think of that has. For some reason, I'm thinking in my mind a train with a bomb on it that's supposed to go, and I'm not talking about the Broken Arrow where they put it on the train.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
What was that? Tony Scott did one, didn't he?
No, that's Unstoppable.
Yeah, Unstoppable. That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Excellent. So we will now play the daily game of Name That Remake. So far you're 4 for 4.
Okay. Yeah, some of mine needs a little bit more help than others.
Okay,
but...
a little bit of help here and there to never hurt anybody.
Yeah.
All right. So let us spin the wheel and see what remake you're going to have to try and guess for us. And around and around and around it goes. Okay. The original is from 1958 and the remake is 1986. And it is about a scientist who decides to use himself as a test subject and something goes wrong. Which will completely change him.
That must be The Fly.
And it is. All right. Hey, you see, you completely redeemed yourself 5 for 5 there.
Yes.
So you don't have to have any concerns about that.
No. I can rest easy now.
Yes, I think you can. All right. So is there anything else you wanted to discuss about this movie in general?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered it.
All right, excellent. So, Andy, for one final time this week, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Andy Goldman?
Yep, you can find my writings about films old and new over at Blueprint Review.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So everyone have a great weekend. Andy, thank you once again.
Thank you for having me back.
Always a pleasure. If any more slots open up, I know who to call.
Yeah.
Not that there's that many more.
No, not many to go.
But who knows? Who knows? All right, so everyone have a great weekend, and I will catch you on the flip side on Monday. But until then, catch you.
Gesundheit.